Has anyone ever shot at you? Mary Carr, in her memoir of her life, tells us that her mother shot at her husband. Actually, two of her husbands. She had five. This kind of detail immediately gets your attention. It's why memoir is engaging, and it's why fiction is engaging too. Fiction and memoir share this kind of thing. In this lecture, I'll talk about memoir and memory, as well as poetry and fiction, and the connections between them. Other questions I talk about include, what's the difference between poetry and song, and when did that difference emerge? What does it mean for a work to be literary? What's the theme of a work? What's literary about memoir? These are some other questions I'm going to look at in the lecture today, and I'm going to discuss the answers to these questions while I talk about the book by Mary Carr, The Art of Memoir. I'm not going to do short 5 or 10 minute lectures as I've done in the past. I'm going to do 1 or 2 longer lectures, and you can listen to them and stop and start as you wish. I'm also providing the transcript online for you in case you want to read it or you're having difficulty following my oral delivery. But this is basically an audio podcast with no video. It will be helpful if you look at the first chapter and the 13th chapter of Mary Carr's Art of Memoir while you're listening, however. The readings for this week include 2 chapters from Mary Carr's book, The Art of Memoir, and 2 sonnets. So far in this class, we've not really talked about poetry or literature much, or how literary techniques work. We've really just done critical thinking. I think critical thinking is an extremely important approach to literature and ideas, and I encourage you to practice it all the time. But meanwhile, when you read literature, don't stop thinking critically. Because when we read literature, we're not just looking for how literary texts tell us things or teach us things. We're looking for what they are saying about the world. And the ideas in poetry, memoir, and fiction are every bit as complicated and critical as the ideas you're reading in nonfiction articles in the New York Times. So this is the first idea for today's lecture. First, when we read a poem or a novel or a memoir or anything like that, we're looking at how the writer presents us with their message. And when I say how, I mean we're looking at the artistic method. And that's a kind of fancy way of saying things like imagery and metaphor, symbol, detail, sensation, rhythm, rhyme, wordplay, allusion, all of those things. These are all different ways that writers use words to convey the message. So there's what the reader does, and there's also the message the reader is going to get. Now, if you take Graham Murphy's class, the LSO, he will tell you that the theme of the work is what I'm calling the message. Now, there are different words for this message. Theme is one of them. Another word for it is the controlling idea or concept. And basically, it's what the writer is trying to get across to us. So if you want to state the theme of the work, you want to try to put it into a sentence, and that sentence will be some kind of idea about the world. So the way that I usually introduce this to students who are just studying literature for the first time is that I say, the literary work is a little bit like a window onto the world, and we look through the glass and through the frame of the window onto the world outside. The page, the written word, is like the glass, and it's also the frame. So the literary work only shows you part of the world outside. It only shows you part, and so it controls what you see and how you see it. And that's fundamental to what kind of message or theme you're going to get from a literary work. Let's think more about this idea that the literary work is somehow a window or a frame on the world. In the Middle Ages, there was this idea that the page of a book was like a frame, almost like a frame for a painting. And in fact, when a book was made in the Middle Ages by hand, it would be constructed very carefully, and a number of people would be involved in that construction. And one was a scribe who would copy the text out by hand. Another was an illustrator who would draw designs in the margin of the book to make it appealing. And the other person was the bookmaker who would construct the book from different materials, including vellum for the pages and wood for the boards of the cover of the book. So this idea that the literary work is somehow a sort of window onto the world, I want to use this to remind you that when you are reading a literary text, you are not really looking for more information about what's in the text necessarily. You're looking for how the text says something about what is outside the text, how the book says something about what is outside the book. Now, let's say you're reading a novel, a work of fiction, and you're reading a story about a family, and the main character of the story is a daughter, and the main antagonist of the story is her mother. So if you were asked for the meaning of the story, you might say something like, the daughter is revealing something about her mother. But that's not the theme of the story. That's just more about the story. The theme of the story is about the world. So what do I mean by the world? I mean whatever the story is representing about something outside the story. So the story is representing to us something about mothers and daughters. Mothers and daughters that really exist in the world, like your mother or your daughter. And if a story is representing a conflict between mothers and daughters, well, then it might be saying something about the conflicts that occur between family members. It doesn't necessarily have to be a conflict between mothers and daughters, but likely it's going to be about some sort of conflict about families. And so if you want to interpret the theme or the meaning of the story, you need to draw on your own personal experience of how families work. And you can also draw on your general knowledge of the world, how the world works, and how families work, and how conflicts in families work. So you might come up with something like this. The story suggests to us that the conflict between mothers and daughters ultimately leads to the development of personality. Now that's just an idea for starters. But notice how that's a full sentence. The sentence is not about the story per se. The sentence is about something that's happening in the world outside the book. And because the sentence is about something outside in the world and not just in the book, it's something that you potentially could research. You possibly could look up what personality means, and you could think about how the author is representing personality in the book. You could look up how the research is on relationships between family members. You could use terms like pro-social behavior or altruism. And you could think about how the author is representing that concept in the book. The author is not a researcher, but that's not the point. The point is for you to make meaning out of the fiction or the poetry that you read. And the way that you make meaning out of that is thinking about what you already know about the world and what the author is saying about the world. So that all sounds straightforward, and so far I'm making it sound as if you don't really need to know quite that much about literature in order to analyze fiction. But that's not the case. It's really fascinating to look at all of the different methods that authors and writers and poets and songwriters use to present their ideas. And there's a rich history of how we understand this, and there's lots of really engaging and appealing ways of getting the reader's attention. And the more that you can identify these different literary techniques, the more you will be able to understand what the writer is trying to say about the world. The more you'll be able to appreciate how the writer is doing it in a literary way. But let's talk about this term literary. Essentially, the word literary refers to types of language that are considered high or high class, or better, or more advanced, or more complicated. Literature is viewed as high art. It's viewed as the best kind of writing. And historically, talented poets who wrote literature were honored by queens and princes. Today, each nation usually has what we call a poet laureate. And laureate means that they wear a crown of laurels. And that's an ancient Greek leaf. The laurel is a leaf, a plant, and it indicates kingship or nobility. So a poet laureate is someone who has been given the honor of being the national poet. And then other poets will have special honors, such as speaking at a presidential ceremony. For example, Maya Angelou was honored by Bill Clinton. I think she spoke at his inauguration ceremony. When I say historically, I mean hundreds of years ago. Good poets were rewarded in different ways. They were given land and money and furniture and expensive coats in exchange for their services. And talented poets used their skills to praise prince and princesses and kings and nobles. So poetry was associated with the upper classes. But that's one kind of poetry. There's actually another kind of poetry, and really we see this poetry in song today, in popular song. And over the past centuries, people who could not read those poets' poems used words and music together to make art. And this kind of poetry is not really viewed as poetry at all today. It's viewed as songs, pop songs. And if you were listening to a song by Little Mix, you are not really thinking of that as poetry. But it is. It uses all of the same techniques that literary poetry that's written on the page uses. In fact, if we look back to 700 years ago, the word song in English meant both something that was music and something that was written down and not music. There was no clear distinction when someone used the word song. People were able to tell the difference between written poetry and, you know, poetry that they heard in a song, but the word song was used to mean both of those things. So the distinction between high-class poetry and low-class pop music is really something that I think is a, you know, a cultural distinction. I mean, technically, they're basically the same thing, except and one is set to music, or it can be written out and just spoken. So what I want to do in this final unit for our class is talk about some literary techniques and how they work in the literature that I'm presenting to you. So let's begin by talking about chapter one from Mary Carr. In The Art of Memoir, she starts with a quotation from Louise Gluck. And the quotation says, "We look at the world once in childhood and the rest is memory." I really like this quotation because it reminds me of the distinction between memory and fiction. There's lots of research that shows that long-term memory is a constructive process. And rather than remembering a perfect image of how things were, our brain tends to reconstruct things based on what makes sense and different sorts of sense impressions. And in fact, if you look at eyewitness testimony in legal cases and the procedure of trying to identify suspects from a lineup, it becomes clear that it's actually very difficult to have a perfect memory of anything. So memory is, I think, importantly fictional in some ways. The quotation, though, doesn't say that, of course. All I've told you is really me thinking critically and making associations with the word memory. And what I'm also doing is thinking about what the quotation of saying is saying in terms of perception, looking at the world versus the memory, remembering the world. If you are going to interpret this quotation, then you need to think about what your associations are for the word memory and the word childhood. What do you believe about how memory comes about? And what do you believe about the differences between memory and fiction, long-term memory, short-term memory? And what about this word looking? What does perception mean to you? What does looking make you think about? Another thing that this quotation does for me is makes me think of my childhood. And it makes me think of how I perceived the world at that time. The other thing you can do is connect your associations with this quotation with the actual title of the chapter. The title of the chapter is The Past's Vigor. And so to analyze the title, you could think about what the word vigor means. Vigor means strength, literally, but it also means a kind of enthusiasm and life force. For example, we might say, quote, "She recited the line with vigor," meaning that she recited it with a particular kind of energy. So I like the word energy if we're going to interpret what vigor means here. Again, it's up to you to think about what your associations are with that word. So if we are to think about how the past lives on in our memory now, then I think the word vigor is quite appropriate because it expresses the kind of energy that the past gives us and the kind of energy that memory has. So when you begin to read Mary Carr's writing, you'll see immediately why reading memoir can be really cool. Every sentence that she writes contains images that conjure up very specific experiences, and they're funny metaphors and they're shocking details. So I find it very exciting to read Mary Carr. For example, in the first sentence, she says, quote, "Everyone gets waylaid by the colossal force of recollection," unquote. So the metaphor here is getting waylaid. You might need to look up what that means, but essentially it means that if you're on a journey, you get delayed by something, almost as if someone attacked you on your journey and prevented you from moving on your way. Well, what is that journey? What does that journey represent? Well, that journey is life. So Carr is saying that as we go along living our lives, we get stuck thinking about the past. And she says we get waylaid by that force. She calls it a colossal force. And that's a lovely metaphor, because what is a colossus? Colossal just means something very large, but the word also evokes an ancient wonder of the world. The Colossus of Rhodes was a statue, an ancient statue in the city of Rhodes in ancient Greece. And so this is a long ago thing as well. The Colossus is from ancient Greece, like memory is from long ago. But another thing Mary Carr does is she really juxtaposes modern contemporary images with conventional classical images. And she opposes American dialect with literary terms. So in the next sentence, she says, "You're a grown-ass woman." And in that same sentence, she says, "The whole door to the past blows open." The word grown-ass is very American dialect. It's very casual. It's very street. But when you say a door to the past blows open, now we're in kind of a whole other place. So I mentioned at the beginning of the lecture that the literary work is a window on the world. And here, Mary Carr is giving us a related metaphor. This one is about memoir itself. She says a door to the past blows open. So what does she mean by that? Well, she means that memoir is opening up our memories to us. It's allowing us to see those memories. So we're using metaphors of access, doors and windows. These are spaces that allow us to see through or walk through them in order to see or experience another world, or to experience the world in a different way. I want to pause here to discuss the definition of memoir and biography and autobiography. So autobiography is when a writer tells the story of their own life. And in an autobiography, usually there's an expectation that the writer will tell the truth and cover things from beginning to end and really tell the story of the whole life. And they won't leave much out. But in the case of a memoir, the writer might take letters or snapshots as parts of their life and just focus on those particular parts of their life. But a memoir can also be exactly the same as an autobiography. There is some overlap between these terms. The word biography is different because there's no implication that the writer is the same person as the person who lived that life. So, for example, there's a number of biographies about Donald Trump. None of them are by him. But in the past, memoir and autobiography were not really seen as literary texts per se. And you can imagine that a biography about Donald Trump is not going to be very literary. What that means is that autobiography was not really studied in school in the same way that people studied fiction and poetry. But over the past 30 years, that has changed, and memoir has become an area of specialty, and it's gained a lot of respect in literature. And in fact, Mary Carr is a poet as well as a memoir writer. So Mary Carr's credibility for writing this manual on memoir, The Art of Memoir, it comes from her own experiences writing memoir and from teaching about it. So she has one book called The Liar's Club and another book called Cherry. And these are really entertaining memoirs, and I recommend that you take a look at them if you're interested in her writing. In her book, The Art of Memoir, she gives a lot of examples from her own life. And she also gives examples from her classes. So she's been teaching classes in memoir, and she's read a lot of student work and unpublished work in memoir, memoir that later becomes published, possibly. And she gives a lot of fascinating examples. And the examples from her own life are particularly great, and they really motivated me to go and buy and read her own memoirs. In the first paragraph of the chapter, The Past's Vigor, Mary Carr discusses how memoir works with memory. She describes writing memoir as a series of different kinds of metaphors. For example, she says that we got waylaid by this force of recollection. That's one metaphor. And she also says there are traumatic memories that rise up unbidden and dwarf you where you stand. So this is a little bit like the Colossus, as if the Colossus were to rise up and make us look small. And then she says there are memories that you dig for. And here's another metaphor, the idea of digging through your memory, as if memory were layers and in the ground building up, digging through memory in order to find some gold. And then she switches metaphors again when she says she's going to pick up every night a thin thread that comes undone that you can follow back through the mind's labyrinth. So this metaphor is related to sewing and weaving, but specifically it evokes the story of the Minotaur and Ariadne. In the ancient Greek story, Ariadne was a princess and Theseus was tasked with killing the Minotaur so he could win her. And she gave him a ball of thread and he used that in order to follow his way back out of the labyrinth after he had killed the Minotaur. So that's a great allusion, and it really shows us how memoir, taking us into memory, takes us into a dangerous space, a space that might have trauma in it and that might be difficult to get out of, right? So one of the reasons we don't want to talk about our memories is that we're a little bit scared of them sometimes. But Mary Carr does not just provide us with metaphors. She often moves pretty quickly between really elaborate, beautiful metaphors to really clear and detailed descriptions of experiences from childhood or another moment in her life. And this is another way in which memoir is very much like fiction. In fact, the qualities that make fiction good are the exact same qualities that make a memoir good. And these include really clear and effective descriptions of the sensations we might have felt in a previous moment. So what I mean is, what did you see? What did you feel in terms of being touched? What did you hear? What did you smell? What did you taste? All of the five senses are involved in what we remember and what we experience, what we perceive. So memoir is good when it evokes all of these sensations and it makes you able to see something very clearly or remember or imagine something very clearly. And fiction is good for the very same reasons. When a fiction writer has the ability to describe for us a scene so that we feel like we're in the scene and we can imagine that scene, that's when fiction writing is really excellent. Of course, it's not the only thing that makes fiction writing great. I did begin by talking about metaphor. Metaphor is hugely important, but these accurate scene descriptions, or scene descriptions with enough detail, they allow us to imagine them in a meaningful way, and that's what makes fiction and memoir really wonderful, and also poetry. Let's not forget poetry. And that's what we find right away in the first chapter of Mary Carr, The Art of Memoir. She says, quote, "You show up at your high school reunion shocked to find a middle-aged populace. Then somebody mentions she sat behind you in Miss Pickett's 7th grade English class, and somehow her prepubescent face blooms awake in you." Close quote. And now it's probably likely that you are thinking about your grade 7 English class, or you are thinking about some kind of English class where you were a little child seeing other children. And so this is how fiction works. It allows us to imagine our own memories and imagine this other scene and connect it with our memories. Quickly after that, she describes, quote, "Where your locker was that year, and that speech class came after English class. You walked home across the football field, fresh with glass." And right after that, she moves into another metaphor, and she says, "A single image can split open the hard seed of the past, and soon memory pours forth from every direction, sprouting its vines and flowers up around you, till the old garden has taken shape in all its fragrant glory." So here again, there's two really detailed metaphors. There's the seed of the past, and there's the garden of our imagination. And these are very fruitful metaphors. Think about where the seed comes from. Why is it hard? What does it have to do in life? What does it mean that the hard seed splits open? Does that sound like a difficult process? Does it sound like a painful process? If that is what the seed is, then that's what the past is too. That's what breaking open the past is like. I mentioned the Minotaur before and Ariadne and the ball of thread, and that was a painful process of going into a dark, dangerous place and trying to get out again somehow. So I think one thing that's different between Mary Carr's memoir and the fiction that we usually read in novels is that novels take these metaphors and they elaborate them throughout the book. But Mary Carr is almost like, it's like she's doing a drive-by with her metaphors. They're very quick, and she moves past and very quickly into a new metaphor. But I find that quite exciting and very rich, and it means there's a lot to talk about in every second line. So what I'm doing in Mary Carr's Art of Memoir book is that I'm close reading. It's a literary technique called close reading. So what does close reading mean? It just means that you read closely to begin with. In other words, you read very carefully. You read word by word. Effective close reading means that you make lots of associations and you ask lots of questions about what each word means. And if you can master this technique, you'll have an endless list of topics to talk about. If one word gives you 7 associations, think about how much you will have to say in every paragraph. You'll never run out of ideas again when you want to talk about literature. The trick with close reading is to think carefully about what each word means and what the associations and connotations of that word are. Connotations of a word, these are not what the word means. The connotations of a word are all the things that you think about when you hear that word, all of the things that the word suggests to you in your imagination.